From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The White House has recently ordered a review of federal programs that help local police departments throughout the U.S. acquire excess military equipment, including assault rifles and armored vehicles. The review comes on the heels of police response to the almost nightly demonstrations in Ferguson, Missouri, since the shooting death of Michael Brown. Law enforcement agencies here in Southwest Florida have acquired military equipment through such programs. We'll explore what local police departments have bought and how that equipment may be used here. Plus, the results are in from Tuesday's primary election. We'll highlight the winners and losers of local and statewide races, along with analysis of what to expect as we head toward the November general election. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. The results are in from Tuesday's primary. The election passed with little pomp, near record low voter turnout, and not much in the way of surprises. Republican Governor Rick Scott and Democratic challenger Charlie Crist now officially hold their party's nominations going into the November general election. And former Department of Children and Families Secretary George Sheldon won his Democratic primary to face off against incumbent Pam Bondi in the state attorney general race. For the rest of the hour, we'll explore the results of Tuesday's election and what to expect as we head toward the general election in the fall. Returning to the studio is Florida Gulf Coast University political science professor Dr. Peter Bergerson. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here, John.
We're also joined by News Press political columnist Betty Parker. You can read her coverage of state politics in her column Parker on Politics and Saturday editions of the News Press and online at news-press.com. Betty, welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for asking me.
I invite our listeners to join the conversation. If you voted in Tuesday's primary election, what motivated you to come out to the polls? And if you didn't, what prompted you to stay home? Connect with our guests with a phone call to 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And first of all, let's explore the governor's race. I just mentioned Governor Rick Scott and former Republican governor-turned-Democrat Charlie Crist both won their party's primaries. Dr. Bergerson, not really any surprises there.
Not really, no. I think that, it was two overwhelmingly well-known candidates, well-funded. Governor Scott had minimal opposition, and the same with Charlie Crist. Nan Rich was a well-known, longtime Democratic and state senator, but just, you have two 800-pound gorillas in the race.
Yeah, I noticed that much to the consternation of Nan Rich supporters, Crist never did engage her in debate. Crist chose a running mate, many weeks before actually getting his party's nomination. And both the Crist and Scott campaigns have been launching attack ads at each other. Did you get the perception that they've already been in general election mode, as though they already had their party's nominations even before Tuesday?
Absolutely. Yeah, and not only the attack ads, but the amount of money that they've raised as well, and the organization and endorsements that they had, the level of campaigning, the exposure that they had in the media, name recognition, almost all of the key factors involved in winning a primary and, for that matter, a general election.
Yeah, and the bottom line really is no surprise, and it hasn't changed. But what people are looking at today, if I can enlarge on this just a little bit, is they're really parsing these results and seeing just how well who did where. For example, Nan Rich did astonishingly well. Now, she still lost to Charlie Crist, but she pulled 40% in North Florida, which is much better than she did elsewhere, even in her home base, the Democratic stronghold of Palm Beach, Broward counties. She was just absolutely trounced by Crist. But if you're looking at the totals, those numbers might indicate that Crist still has some work to do in North Florida, although the bulk of the Democratic voters are indeed down in Southeast Florida.
Yeah, I would agree with what Betty had to say, of course.
So do you think Crist might still have a challenge in, you know, convincing some Democratic voters, longtime Democratic voters, that he is a quote-unquote true Democrat?
Oh, no question about it. There's, you know, I think that's going to be one of the determining factors of the outcome of the November election is voter turnout, and can he generate enough interest in Democrats to vote for him in November?
And that's the key question. Will Democrats be excited enough to make the effort to get a ballot or go to the polls, however they choose to do it? Will they care enough, be excited enough to do that for Charlie Crist?
Yeah, that'll be that's going to be a mountain to climb.
Do you think his victory Tuesday in some way represents a successful political reinvention for Crist? I mean, after all, I think this is the first election he's won since leaving the Republican Party.
Go ahead, Betty.
It settles some question. You know, it moves the process forward. There are some big donors, some big advocacy groups out there who were kind of sitting on the sidelines and saying, well, the nomination's not done. It's still a primary. I'm not going to. Now all that's settled. Crist is the nominee. And it's time for people to fish or cut bait. If they're going to support the Democrat, they no longer have that excuse.
Yeah, I think that this next week or so, maybe a couple of weeks, will be really critical in uniting the party, perhaps bringing in other people that give Charlie Crist some, you know, Democratic credibility. I noticed that Senator Nelson's going to campaign with him and Nan Rich. So there's still going to be, you know, it's very, very hard for candidates who change one party to the other to be successful when they do it. Most of them, when they change parties, they stay in office. They just change one party to the next.
And, you know, Scott has already spent tens of millions of dollars so far in this campaign. And the New York Times reports Florida's gubernatorial race is expected to be the most expensive election in the nation this year, coming in at a cost of more than $100 million. I'm sure that's going to help keep the campaign in the national spotlight, but is this essentially bad news for voters who, you know, as I've just been hearing anecdotally from folks who are already tired of hearing the ads?
Yeah. Not only is we have the 100 million number that has been published around, you then have the 50 million number of the Crist supporters, and that does not include the PACs and special interest money. And so you may see this well over $150 million, and it's going to be primarily going to be negative.
I certainly agree with that. And this race is also getting a lot of attention nationally, not just for the money, but also, you know, Crist's reinvention is unprecedented, and now he's won the primary. He's had certainly that level of success. But also, you know, people have wondered, some people have said, you know, how much of this success would Crist be able to count if his opponent were anybody other than Rick Scott, who has record high negatives of his own. You know, Crist isn't just running in a vacuum. He's running against Rick Scott. And a lot of people want to defeat Rick Scott. They'll hold their nose and vote for Crist or not. That's the question.
Mm-hmm. And I think also that Florida being the fourth largest state in the country, why there's some people who are looking forward to 2016 as well, and the role that the governor might have in the presidential campaign or election, and depending upon which candidate wins, will could have an impact on that campaign and election, because the presidential election will begin probably in mid to late November or surely in January.
And polls so far show Scott and Crist in pretty much a political deadlock. Is this race likely to be too close to really have any kind of predictions this early out?
Betty, go ahead.
I would not predict this race early out. It's Rick Scott has certainly narrowed, you know, the lead that Charlie Crist had, and he spent a lot of money. It'll take that much more, but then I'm not sure how much more he has to gain. I'm certain there's a lot, but so much of it is just going to depend on who can motivate their voters to vote.
Yeah, I think I would agree with what Betty had to say, and I think there's maybe a couple of other things. Maybe the debates might be a tipping point in the campaign. The nature of the coverage in an election that clearly is very competitive. If one of the candidates would make a major gaffe or a major mistake, my guess is that you're going to be within 3 to 5 percentage points or less a determining factor. And so organization, getting out the vote, and the nature of the campaign itself, now that we have two settled candidates and we're moving into that the quote-unquote election season, now there will be closer attention.
Following Tuesday's primary election, we're exploring results and looking ahead to the November general election. We're talking with News Press columnist Betty Parker and FGCU political science professor Dr. Peter Bergerson. Join our conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or join our live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And something we've seen happening quite a bit in this year's gubernatorial race is Scott and Chris campaigns filing ethics complaints against one another. A Chris supporter filed a complaint against Scott over the presence of on-duty law enforcement at a Scott campaign event. Chris has faced ethics complaints over his financial disclosure form, his ties to his employer Morgan & Morgan, and a sponsorship of his candidacy by a NASCAR driver. To my knowledge, all of these complaints that have been investigated and resolved have ended up being dropped. Is this becoming popular as a campaign tool, filing an ethics complaint?
I think this is one of the more interesting campaign practices we've seen in this election, because the practice definitely has increased dramatically. But what you're seeing, and the media plays a big part in this, we're complicit in it, somebody will file a complaint against something that's really obscure or absurd, and then they tell the media, and there's a big headline the next day, Joe Blow faces ethics allegations, blah, blah. And nothing ever comes of it. But then you'll see that headline in the opponent's ad they'll say, my opponent faces ethics investigations. And they make it sound like something that's really, really bad, when in fact it's really nothing more than a technicality or an administrative procedure.
Yeah, I would agree. There's also, I think, one other perhaps element in it, and that is the strategy of placing your opponent on the defensive and having to answer that so that you're distracted from the message that you want to get out. Now you have to spend at least one news cycle explaining, why this happened or didn't happen, and so that becomes a distraction. I think there's one other element that maybe we might have overlooked, and that's the libertarian. There's a libertarian candidate, and who he may impact negatively or in turn positively may have effect. I don't know that he's going to have that big of a impact, but if he reaches the 5% threshold, that could make a difference.
Absolutely, and you're right. We do tend to forget about them, but when elections are so close these days, and so many of these big statewide elections are decided by 1 or 2 percentage points, a third party candidate who pulls 1 or 2% can absolutely affect the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just real briefly, going back to this issue of the ethics complaints, Dr. Bergerson, regardless of their success as a campaign tactic, is this concerning to you that, a system that was basically set up with the intention of holding Florida public officials to higher ethical standards being used as a campaign tool?
Well, sure. I mean, the obvious answer is yes, but you know, this, you know, no one said that politics wasn't a contact sport,
sure.
And this is a way, and this is a form of the contact chess game, so to say, and. As Betty pointed out, the initial headline will be a capture, will capture the attention of some people, and that will be a reinforcement to what they're already believing about the candidate, that good or bad or whatever, that and so it becomes that reinforcement. But yeah, they're not following the Hoyle rules of Hoyle here.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not they're not following the intent of the law, but it's what they do is legal, and if they can find some way to work it to their advantage, then they will. But it does make a little bit of a mockery of the system, but it's a legal mockery.
Well, let's turn for a minute to another statewide race that saw, you know, important determinations made in Tuesday's primary. Former Department of Children and Families Secretary George Sheldon beat out House Minority Leader Perry Thurston in the Democratic primary to take on current Republican Attorney General Pam Bondi in the fall. Betty, any surprise that Sheldon beat out Thurston?
Not really. George Sheldon has been active at various, not statewide elected office, but he's held many, many important high-level positions. He is enormously respected by political people and knowledgeable people in both parties. I think all but the most rabid partisan people will tell you on both sides that his integrity and his honesty and his intellect have always been, you know, extremely high and acknowledged. He's just never been able to raise his profile much in a statewide race.
Well, you know, when you have as much money as being spent by the two gubernatorial candidates, it drowns out, and you know, it sucks all the oxygen out of the air for almost any of the other candidates and opportunity to promote themselves. And so, you know, this is when you have races that don't have serious competition, the other races tend to fall by the wayside.
Well, and I know left-leaning groups have recently taken shots at Attorney General Pam Bondi over a defense of Florida's ban on same-sex marriage, which, of course, has been making headlines with numerous court cases here in Florida in recent months. Do you think that's likely to impact the election or her chances of winning re-election?
Betty, what do you think?
Just in terms of sheer numbers, I would question whether that will have a major impact on that race or not. But Pam Bondi is enormously popular among Republican voters. She's very telegenic. She's very well-spoken. I think she's a former CNN analyst, so she's very good on television. And she's been an incredibly successful fundraiser. She's one of their ideal candidates.
Yeah, I would agree and add that in this race, name recognition and name recall, regardless of where the issue is, they may not recall associate her with you know, whether it's same-sex marriage or anything else, but she'll have that name recall, and I don't see that as being a game changer.
And we saw near record low voter turnout for Tuesday's primary, but again, no surprises there. Do you think perhaps memories of long lines at the polls 2 years ago was keeping people away, or is this type of voter turnout level typical for non-presidential primary elections?
I think it's typical. It might have been be a little low, but nationwide, non-competitive primaries are usually in the 20 to 25% range, and so I would put it in that particular category. You know, if you, if and not only did you not have any intra-party competition, you only really had two races. And so I realize there were, county commission and school board races, but the level of political activity and engagement just wasn't there.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting, though, that the Southeast Florida had some record low turnouts, but right here in Southwest Florida, Lee County had the second highest turnout in the state with 24%, almost 25%, and Glades County had the state's lowest turnout with, I think it was around 8%. But it was low, and midterm elections traditionally are.
Well, in turning our attention toward November, we know that voter turnout, especially among Democrats, is lower in non-presidential election years. But should we expect to see an increase in voter participation in the general election? And I'm thinking especially given that, it is the general, not the primary, and there's going to be some hot-button issues there, like the medical marijuana ballot initiative.
Go ahead, Betty.
Generals always do, and everybody thinks the medical marijuana question is likely to bring out a host of new, interested, and very involved voters. This is something that affects a lot of people very personally, so it might make them more likely to turn out. I know both governor candidates are cognizant of that importance, and they're going to be working really hard.
Yeah, my guess is that the turnout for the November election is going to follow the traditional turnout patterns that you see in off-year elections, and that is that the turnout could be, compared to presidential years, off somewhere between 15% and 20%. And that's going to be one of the hurdles that the Democrats are going to have to address.
And besides just what percentage of eligible voters actually came out, the way, the method that folks are voting is still changing. Secretary of State Ken Detzner said Tuesday's election may turn out to be the first time in Florida history that more people sent in absentee ballots or took advantage of early voting than actually showed up to the polls on Election Day. Should we expect to see this trend continue as more and more people seem to be giving up the tradition of showing up at the polls on Election Day?
No, I absolutely agree that voting now has become a process of anywhere from a week to 10, 15 days. And so even Florida, which has moved their dates at least three times recently, they're back to approximately a 10-day or so. But no, voting is, and this is, again, a nationwide trend where more people vote either absentee or early voting than on Election Day. So I see this much, much more.
I agree, and certainly in Lee County, we've absentee and mail-in have surpassed the Election Day. I think in the last two election, well, the special congressional election, and then this one, and for the first time statewide in Florida now. What's also interesting, though, and this is purely anecdotal, I've heard more people this time saying they regret voting as early as they did because of some last-minute things that happened or that they just realized or found out about late in the campaign. And of course, once you vote, it's done. You don't get right to say, "Oops, I changed my mind."
Yeah.
And of course, the candidates are also cognizant of that earlier voting, and we're not getting so many last-minute intentional surprises from the candidates, but it still does happen.
And Betty, I know with your work, you've got your finger on the pulse of, statewide and local elections here in Southwest Florida. Were there any results that surprised you?
Not so much. The incumbents just seemed to do really, really well. I thought there was some discontent with the Lee County School Board, but all of their incumbents either won or are second place and in a runoff in November. But incumbents across the board fared really well. And I think in this area, the type of person that is a regular primary Republican voter tends to go with their familiar incumbent candidate, barring some really catastrophic event.
And this was particularly true also on the judicial side of the ballot. The one thing perhaps maybe minor, but is the undervoting, that the people who went in and voted perhaps for one or two or three races, and then that was it. And so
didn't bother with the other bubbles.
They didn't bother with the other races. And so that would be the only thing that perhaps was stood out to me.
Yeah. And there was a judicial race. There were two judicial races for the five-county circuit. Both of them involved a woman and a man. And in both cases, the women won. And that follows a trend I read about fairly recently from another university professor who had studied judicial races in Florida and said that women are running more as judges and doing extremely well when they do.
Interesting, since judges, just by the nature of their job, can't really campaign or talk about their positions much. That's something to follow. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. I think there's a feeling that perhaps women attorneys and judges maybe have more of a judicial compassion and qualities that the voters are looking for as opposed to a male.
Sure. Well, we're going to have to leave the conversation there, but thank you so much, Peter Bergerson of FGCU and Betty Parker with the News Press for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Great to see you, Betty.
Thanks to my producers, Richard Chinqui and Luke Martin. This is WGCU, Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM.